Well, Psalm 34 was a psalm greatly loaded with personal significance for David. I mean, you heard about how the psalm came about to be written in 1 Samuel 21, the passage that Jim read. David is on the run, being pursued by King Saul, who was out to kill him. He left the country, finally, to go to the country of Philistia, the city of Gath. He had recently killed Goliath, who was from Gath, a giant, and now he was entering this very city with Goliath's sword in his own hand. Why would you do that, David? I don't know. Maybe he would think that Achish, king of Gath, would welcome a high-level defector from Israel, the enemy nation of the Philistines. Perhaps he would welcome one of Saul's chief lieutenants coming over to the Philistine side. Turns out he was wrong about that. When Achish's servant saw David, the anointed king of Israel, David, the giant killer, David, the hero of the battle where tens of thousands of Philistines had been killed, they sounded the alarm to King Achish, and David rapidly realized he was in deep trouble. First Samuel says, he took these words to heart and was much afraid. There he was, alone, defenseless, surrounded by enemies in Gath, the Philistine stronghold. The psalm tells us that at that moment he cried out to God, he prayed. 1 Samuel tells us that he pretended to be insane. He scribbled nonsense graffiti on the walls and doors. He let spit dribble down his beard. Achish said, "This guy's nuts. I have enough, my population quota for Mad Men is completely full. I don't need any more. Get him out of here." And so Achish sent him away, and he escaped to the cave. And so when we turn to Psalm 34, in the prefatory inscription to the psalm, it says, this psalm is of David, when he changed his behavior before Abimelech so that he drove him out and he went away. It connects with that incident. This is why and when David wrote this psalm. When he had time to reflect, he didn't say, "Boy, was I lucky to get out of there." What he said is, "God is so good. If only you knew, if only you could taste and see." It was God who heard my desperate prayer and who rescued me and delivered me. And he wrote this psalm to express the thankfulness of his heart, to praise God. It's interesting, in the Hebrew it's an acrostic psalm. Each verse begins with one successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Verse 1 begins with A, verse 2 begins with B, and so on. So it's carefully crafted because he wants to memorialize his praise to God. And we share in this emotional psalm, we share in David's personal experience. This is also a psalm with great personal significance for me. One morning in 1986, I had read the psalm, and later that day, our six-year-old son became gravely ill with meningitis, spent some time in the hospital, and the psalm was my companion throughout that experience. And I hope this psalm will come to have greater personal significance for you this morning. Let's explore it together. It begins with, "I will bless the Lord at all times." when it's good, when it's bad, the good times, verse 4, when the Lord hears my prayers and delivers me, my response to that, verse 5, is my face is radiant, it's joyful, it's beaming. I will bless the Lord in the good times, but I will bless the Lord in the bad times. Verse 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous. Verse 17, the Lord delivers them out of all his troubles, times of trouble, times of affliction, with the result that, verse 18, those who go through such times become brokenhearted, they become crushed in spirit. And I'll bless the Lord in those times as well, in the good, in the bad. I will discipline myself to praise, not just float from thought to thought, from distraction to distraction, but I will bless the Lord. He's worthy. My heart is full at all times. And in those troublesome times, I will exercise faith. When I am down, I will look to God and bless the Lord. When I'm walking through the valley, I will bless the Lord at all times, looking to Him. Interesting, I'm reminded of Psalm 84, verses 5 and 6. Blessed are those whose strength is in you, in whose heart are the highways to Zion, as they go through the valley of Baca. Baca is a funny word. It either means weeping or perhaps thirst. As they go through this valley of weeping, they make it a place of springs. The early rain also covers it with pools. So when those who will trust in the Lord go through a valley of weeping, they make it a place of joy. Or perhaps go through a dry and thirsty valley and it becomes a place full of springs because they are looking to God in the middle of these troublesome times. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. I won't just think it. I will say it. His praise will continually be in my mouth. And when I speak, when I utter, when I form words and say them, this does me good. My heart is rejoicing in the Lord, but I'm going to express it verbally. His praise will continually be in my mouth. Hosea says, take with you words and return to the Lord. Like confession of sin. It's one thing to realize that I have sinned against God or against someone else, but to confess it, I verbalize it. And that action is extremely important. Or, as in Psalm 40, verses 9 and 10, this speaking, verbalizing my thoughts does me good. I have told the glad news of deliverance in the great congregation. God loosed my bonds. God set me free. God delivered me. Behold, I have not restrained my lips, as you know, O Lord. I have not hidden your deliverance within my heart. I have spoken of your faithfulness and your salvation. I have not concealed your steadfast love and your faithfulness from the great congregation. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. And at those times, it does me good. And it does others good as well. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. When they hear God being praised, they start singing too. It does them good. It's like when you have two identical tuning forks and you hit one of them and the other one resonates and vibrates as well. Christians are on the same wavelength. And when they hear God being praised, their heart starts resonating with, yes, the Lord is good. I will praise him as well. So when his praise is on my mouth, it does me good, it does others good, and it brings glory to God. He deserves to be spoken of. He deserves to be sung of. He deserves to be shouted about. I don't just sing to lift up my spirits. I sing to the Lord. David says, "My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. I boast in the Lord because he's done it all." I mean, what did David do? He let spit dribble down his beard and acted like a crazy man. And by God's mercy, he was released from this place of imminent danger. I'll boast in the Lord. I will boast in the Lord. His ruse of insanity was a desperate play. How could that possibly succeed in getting him out of Gath? God did it. God was the one who gave success to his weak little attempt. I will boast in the Lord. And as for me, in 1986, we felt so helpless with our little son so sick. If you have little kids, I'm sure you can identify with it. That the time you feel the most desperate, the most emotional, the most helpless is when you have a little one. Sick, you can do nothing. Your heart is just in knots. And God was merciful. And God heard our prayers and restored him to health. But it's the same for us all every day, right? Our weakness is pretty apparent. I've seen how foolish I am. Like in the morning, I'm exuberant about God, ready to serve God. Then comes a thought or an email, a temptation, and I just fall flat. And I see how weak I am. I want to obey, to serve God. I don't even make it till noon. I get angry, or I find it hard to forgive, or I don't want to show mercy. I'm not present. I just prayed for this person, and here I am talking to them, and my mind's somewhere else. I'm not even there. I'm unmotivated. I'm lazy. I take offense. So when God hears and delivers me, it's not me. I boast in the Lord. I am so weak. This is interesting, though, right? My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. When did the humble ever get happy about hearing someone boast? Curious juxtaposition. Well, it's when they boast in the Lord. If I boast in myself, their skin crawls. When I boast in the Lord, they're glad because God is lifted up. Reminded of Jeremiah 9, 23 and 24. If you want to turn there with me, it's page 371. We'll talk about this for just a second. This is kind of the same deal. Jeremiah 9, 23, 24. Thus says the Lord, "Let not the wise man boast in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man boast in his might. Let not the rich man boast in his riches. But let him who boasts boast in this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who practices steadfast love, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, declares the Lord." So the wise man has wisdom, obviously. The mighty man has might. The rich man has riches. Humility is not pretending that I am not what I am. But humility is a perspective on God. Let him who boasts boast in this, that he understands and knows me. So the wise man clearly is wise, but he's not saying, "Oh, I'm so wise." He's not saying I'm not wise, but he's not boasting in his wisdom. He's conscious of it. I know who I am. But what he is fixated upon, what he's rejoicing in, is that not him, what he legitimately is, but on God, who he is. Let him who boasts in this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who practices steadfast love, justice, and righteousness in the earth. The wise man, the rich man, these men of accomplishment, these men of gifts are focused on God and no matter what they are, what they care about, what they get excited about, what they value is God above me. God is more important than who I am, what I've done, what I have. I see, and I come to see and understand my failings and weaknesses, and my eyes are on the Lord. I boast in the Lord. And that's what was happening here in Psalm 34. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. The humble hear and are glad. Verse 3, O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. He calls us to join him in magnifying the Lord. And when he does that, the humble will resonate and respond. Well, you know what a magnifying glass is. Now, the problem is that last time I talked about a magnifying glass, because kids talked to me about this afterwards, it was about my days as a young lad when I used that to start fires. And so forget I ever said that. The real purpose of a magnifying glass is to make things bigger, and so that I can see my sliver to take it out. And David calls on us to magnify the Lord with him, to focus on him and enlarge who he is, what he's done, his goodness to me. Let's talk about it more and more. Let's magnify the Lord. I don't want to magnify myself. I don't want to magnify what I've done. Let's not talk about me. Let's not think about me. Let's talk about the Lord, who he is, how glorious he is. And in this case, in particular, how merciful he's been to me. I was in deep trouble in Gath. I cried out to God, and he miraculously delivered me. I will bless the Lord at all times. Verse 4, I sought the Lord. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. David, why are you so joyful in the Lord? Well, here's why. Here's what has just happened to me. I'm fresh from the crisis, and I've experienced deliverance. I've had the victory that overcomes the world, my faith in God. Because I was looking to God when I was desperately in trouble. Definition of faith, right? Well, the storyline was that David prayed and God delivered. He said that several times, right? Verse 4, I sought the Lord and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. Verse 6 says it a different way. This poor man cried and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. Verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, his ears toward their cry. Verse 17, when the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. That's what this psalm is all about. That's why he's blessing the Lord at all times. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. When you hear, I sought the Lord, it sounds like an extensive, protracted prayer. But it wasn't. Remember the circumstances. He's in front of Achish, and these guys are saying, do you know who he is? And he has to respond. And he describes his prayer, verse 6, this poor man cried. He didn't have time to put paragraphs of prayer together. But it was a reflexive turning of his heart to God in his trouble. Same thing, verse 15. The ears of the Lord are toward their cry. Or verse 17, when the righteous cry for help. It was brief. It was syllables at the most. Help, Lord. Like Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 4. He was the king's cupbearer. And the king asked him, why is your face sad? And then he's going to answer. In between the question and the answer, it says that, so I prayed to the God of heaven. Very brief. A cry to the Lord. Yet on the basis of that prayer, God's deliverance comes to him. David, I was threatened in the presence of King Achish, overwhelmed in grave danger. Where did I turn? Got to figure this one out. Where do you turn in crisis? No. What was it? I got this. I can do this. Let's see what happens. Let's try this. No, I sought the Lord. It was a humility, a turning away from myself. It was a faith, a looking to God whom I cannot see, a looking to God because He is, and He answers prayer. Hebrews 11, whoever would draw near to God must believe that He exists and that He rewards those who seek Him. So David seeks the Lord in this fraction of a second, and God hears his prayer. This poor man cried. That was an urgent need. The Philistines called him David, king of the land. He calls himself this poor man. Because I know who I am before God. I'm in way over my head today. I have no hope in the world but God. So it's no time for carefully curated prayer. You ever been there? Powerful temptation seizes you. You must look to God. Darkness, grief, fear, anxiety descend on you like a sudden storm. And all you can formulate is help, Lord. But this deliverance was never about me, never dependent upon the quality, the maturity, the purity of my prayer. That's not why God hears me. That's not why God answers me. It's not why God saves me. He had only a fragment of a prayer, and yet God hears and saves him. He delivers me from all my fears. It was a complete deliverance, not a partial. He saved him out of all his troubles. It was about God in response to this little prayer. And really, it was a rather inglorious deliverance, though it was effectual. And David did not crush his enemies. He was run out of town being called a madman. But David said, look, I'll take it. I'm out of there and this is good. I'm just glad to escape with my life. God has many ways to deliver. Sometimes ordinarily, sometimes miraculously, sometimes in humbling ways. It's all God, though. It's all God. I will bless the Lord at all times. I sought the Lord and He answered me. Verse 8, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. An invitation from David to share his experience of the goodness of God. David says, this has been my personal experience, and I want you to share in that experience. To know versus to taste. I don't want you to say a good book, set it over, going to bed now. No, I want you to taste, to have that lozenge, that piece of candy in your mouth and suck on it, to chew that piece of meat and taste the juices. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. I want you to experience it. You've heard about this good God. Maybe you half believe it because some Christians you've met are so enthused about it all. So all in. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Verse 9, oh, fear the Lord, you His saints, for those who fear Him have no lack. Fear the Lord, Christian. You've been captive to other fears. Verse 4, I sought the Lord and answered me and delivered me from all my fears. I'm calling on you to taste and see that the Lord is good and to take a new view of those fearful things that held you captive, those things that frightened you to run back within yourself. Take a new view of those fearful things and take a new view of God. God controls all those forces that you fear. They are not on the loose. They're on a leash, and your good God holds the end of the leash firmly in his hand. Those who fear him have no lack. If you will fear God, you can disregard what is threatening you. Fear him and he'll supply your every need. For those who fear him have no lack. He will not leave you destitute. Young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. What's more powerful than the king of beasts? And when are they more powerful than when they are at the prime of their strength, young lions? Yet on Thursday they may go hungry because they don't find any prey. But those who seek the Lord, those who wait upon the Lord, those who trust in the Lord, those who look to the Lord, he will not let you have any lack. Psalm 37:25, I have been young and am now old, and yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread. He is ever lending generously. Those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Verse 11, but the fear of the Lord has moral demands on us. Come, children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. I mean, because this sounds great, doesn't it? Of any good thing? What man is there who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? He wants to see good and have no lack. What's the fear of the Lord all about? Well, verses 13 and 14, there's a fuller story here. If you want this blessing, lack no good, seeing good, there are implications for how you live. A couple of examples. How you speak, keep your tongue from evil. How you deal with evil and temptation, turn away from evil and do good. Fearing God is a lifestyle. Fearing God is a commitment to serve God. It's just not a 911, help comes, thank you very much, go on and do whatever. It's not a get out of jail free card. There's a fuller story here. God hears the prayers of the righteous. God responds to those who fear him. So this is for his own children. But taste and see that the Lord is good. Would God really listen to me? Verse 15 says, God is so ready to hear your prayer. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous. His ears are toward their cry. You get the picture? God is, it's that God is just waiting. And he sees Bart going into the tunnel. And he says, I wonder if he'll pray to me. I wonder if he'll look to me. I wonder if he'll not think he can do it on his own. I'm just gonna wait. If he prays, I'm in, I'm on this. I'm going to hear his prayer. His eyes are toward the righteous. His ears are toward their cry. God is poised, waiting expectantly for his children to cry to them. And guess what he's going to do? He's going to answer. He's going to respond. He's going to deliver. He's going to save, because he wants them to pray to him. The Lord is near, verse 18. He's not far away in a corner, remote, distant. No, he is near to his own. But look at what condition he lets you get in. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. He lets his own go through these afflictions. He lets his own go through these troubles. And it breaks them down. And it disassembles them. And it crushes them like grapes in a wine press. And the juice comes out. But But that was the goal. That wasn't an accident. That wasn't an unforeseen circumstance. That's what God wanted for his own. Psalm 51:17, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit. A broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. Are you asking God why he's so tough on you? Why he lets you get so hammered emotionally and spiritually? The answer is, it's because he's making something of you. Because he doesn't want you to be self-sufficient. He wants you to see your need of him. Because he wants you to pray with all your heart, desperately. You thought you're on top of the world. So smart, so capable, and God was just a little herb to put on the top of your salad. You need God more than you thought. He wants to be your everything, brokenhearted, crushed in spirit. Maybe you say, well, I've prayed, but I'm not delivered yet. Well, maybe God still has something to teach you. Maybe God is still working on humbling you. Maybe God knows that you're still clinging to your own righteousness, still insisting on your own self-sufficiency. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Verse 19, yet for the righteous there are many afflictions. Why is this happening? Why another bruising episode? Affliction does not mean that the Lord isn't good. Taste and see that the Lord is good. And in that paragraph he says, many are the afflictions of the righteous. Now the sentence ends with, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. But there are the afflictions. Inevitably, unmistakably, even as an evidence of the Lord's goodness. Affliction doesn't mean that the Lord isn't good. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, and he has many good purposes in troubles. It's not our purpose to go through all of those, but he teaches us faith. He teaches us to pray. He makes us humble and brokenhearted, etc. And the wicked experience affliction as well. Verse 21, affliction will slay the wicked. The outcome is different for them. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. So taste and see that the Lord is good. His eyes, his ears are towards his own, towards the righteous. He is ready and waiting and just waiting for them to pray so that he can deliver them. The Lord is near the weak, the humble, the brokenhearted, the crushed saints who look to him. And he does not hear just grand, eloquent, well-put-together prayers, but he hears my desperate cries to him, and he delivers, and he saves, and he supplies my lacks. David says, I tell you, he's done it for me in my most desperate times. And many of you will testify the same. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. And the ultimate is verse 22, the Lord redeems the life of his servant. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. Not just deliverance out of tough circumstances, but deliverance from guilt, deliverance from sin, deliverance from the just punishment for all the wrong that we have done through Jesus Christ. God's ultimate gift of love, his mission to save through Jesus, the one who comes and gives himself, expressing the Father's love to win a people for himself. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good.